Hi guys, welcome to the Accounting Tech Tar Pit, presented by Early Adopters Hub, the accelerator for accounting tech. I'm your host, Jack Teal, and this is a podcast for accounting tech startup founders focused on no BS, candid conversations about the challenges and benefits of building a startup in the accounting industry. Welcome back. Johan and I are very excited for hopefully quite a unique conversation that we're going to have today. We're joined by an awesome guest, someone who has founded a startup in the accounting tech-ish space. Probably not somebody heaps of people know, but that's the whole point. You know, we want to have these conversations with startup founders at every stage of the journey. So Brett Turley, great to have you here, mate.
Thanks for having me on, gents. Great to be here.
Yeah, thanks for joining us and for obviously giving us a little bit of your time. I think, you know, as I said, you know, your perspective is one of an early stage startup founder, and we'll obviously get into the journey that you've been on. And, you know, since wrapping up shop with BitLeave, you know, I think, you know, it's an interesting perspective to provide. You know, it's one thing for us to have these conversations with successful startups that have gone on to raise millions and millions of dollars and taken over the world. And it's equally as important to have conversations with founders who have taken a different route, because I think anyone who's early in the founder journey deserves to have access to insight from both of those pathways. So before we jump into questions, just want to give our listeners a little bit more background about you, and feel free to correct anything that I say here. But basically, so you're the co-founder of BitLeave, which was basically a platform that helped manage both employee burnout and excess leave liabilities for companies. You got funded through Antler back in 2022. But since then, you've wrapped that up. You're now working at Yellow Canary. Before both of those things, you had a number of roles in various tech businesses, particularly in product. And I think what's the most unique thing you've got on your CV that a lot of founders don't have and can't say is that you've completed two tours of Afghanistan as part of the Australian Army. So, you know, real war stories, real battle scars, which I'm sure we can get into today. But, you know, obviously, I have to ask the question, you know, where and how did, you know, did the entrepreneur startup bug hit you?
Yeah, I think the first thing I'll say, the similarity between combat and startups quite similar. People are always pretty surprised when I say it evokes the same physiological and psychological responses as when you're in combat. So I think that's why I got drawn to the startup space. Another impact was probably my father running his own businesses when I was growing up, but then also going through my journey into a career in tech led me to a career in startups after launching a successful business that I wound up a few years ago. That was a physical bricks and mortar style business, and wanted to really have a go at the digital tech space after spending some time as a product manager in there.
Yeah, okay, cool. So getting into your specific experience around BitLeave, which is obviously going to be the focus of our chat today, what was your motivation there, and how did you kind of land on that problem that you were trying to solve?
Yeah, so that started COVID, like most things in the most recent years for people and their ideas. It started originally as a wellness product for employees. So internally, it started in a company that I was working for. We were one of the fastest growing startups in APAC at a point. Everyone was really struggling with lockdown, remote work and those sorts of things. So built a wellness product internally, scaled that out, built a corporate wellness product off the back of it. So left my steady six-figure a year job in a startup to go pursue this. Then realized I couldn't scale it economically through the wellness space, because that's just a cluttered space with lots of competitors. And then took the idea around burnout into the Antler program. And that's where I really just opened up my thought process and heard a million different opinions, went back down the discovery phase with customers and found that correlation between the way people use their leave and also the business side problem of excess leave liabilities. And that's really the genesis of BitLeave itself.
And so where were you at in terms of your confidence that this was going to be, I suppose, a, you know, successful startup, successful business? potentially maybe at that point that you graduated from Antler, where was your confidence at that point?
So after the last couple of years of playing in the space and talking to, by the end of the corporate wellness piece, I'd spoken to thousands of individuals, and then repeating that process for business leaders and things like that inside Antler around the actual problem space is the correlation between leave and burnout and then that liability thing. I was confident in the problem that it existed. On a product level, there was a couple of competitors in both the US, well, mainly in the US at that point, that I'd seen go on to raise like $25 million and then a subsequent round afterwards. So I knew there was money and interest in the space, but the product that they'd launched, I wasn't actually 100% confident, hence why we pivoted away quite quickly, which their versions were a digital cash out solution on a credit card. And that's sort of evolving, and that's where one of the very first pivots came in the product. So to summarize, problem space was confident, product and business still very much needing to work that out because I didn't have those answers yet because there was multiple differing opinions there.
Brett, try and maybe pick on one thing you said. Maybe it's a little bit too early in the conversation, but I mean, as far as the quantity of research, like you said, you've spoken to like thousands of people and individuals, which not a lot of startup founders, to be honest, do. And sometimes it's shocking how they talk to just a few people before they actually commit to like building a product. Yeah. A bit scary sometimes. But anyway, I mean, do you think though, like the quantity of the research was there, but potentially not the quality, or you think there wasn't really any issue as far as the market research stage early on?
So I broke my research down, particularly during Antler and interviews around the problem space. So purely just around the problem itself and not offering any solution, very similar to how you guys run it, right? That's why when I met you, it was really like the access to the accountants to go through that phase again was the piece that I was very interested in. And then the second round of interviews was around the solution space. And that's where we found some white space, but white space doesn't necessarily mean there's a space for a product there, which is what I found at the end of the journey, not learning that it was more suitable to be built inside another product, hence why where I'm working now and what I'm doing in some of the space there. But I don't think it was so much a quality issue. I just think it was part of that journey. I wanted to work in this space specifically, so burnout, helping that sort of thing. So I think that's where I made the decision at the end to switch it off and join a fast-growing scale-up where I could continue that sort of effort there instead of just trying to persist, and then have to pivot out and become like a boring automation piece of software for accountants or a business. Like that wasn't going to be interesting enough for me to keep the lights on, I don't think.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. And we'll get into that decision in a minute. Obviously, we want to have a chat about how you kind of came to that. But before that, you mentioned that there was some pivots during that process. Can you talk us through how you defined or how you decided and determined the need to pivot and how significant were those adjustments that you were making?
Yeah, so the first pivot was we pitched at Antler when we first made it through the investment committee was that digital cash out solution. And our the research was that we based on our competitor research, that was the only sort of solution available in market for the problem. But then once we got out and actually got to just what it took a while for the cash to hit the bank, actually. So what we did was spend time talking to more customers about the problem, trying to sort of see like on a business level, like where, like whether it was an SMB type product or whether it was an enterprise product that we needed to build and sort of better inform that. And then through consistent chats with HR leaders, accountants or finance professionals inside companies, they just weren't going to entertain a standalone cash out solution. A, because it didn't remove the risk from the employer if an employee cashed out all their leave and then burnt out and then had a work cover claim, for instance, off the back of it. So there was too much risk involved in that type of product here in Australia, very different from some of our US competitors where there's less rules and regulations around the space. that was pivot one. And then we sort of went down the channel sort of stream once we started to build out the MVP or the V1 of the product as we were talking to people. And that's where we went from SMB to one-to-many relationships being accountants. And that's sort of how we got in touch and then sort of started our journey together. So that pivot was then around the channel and who could then provide a scalable channel into market. And then that's obviously where we ran into those problems, or not problems, but just the problems, the issues everyone faces when trying to launch an accounting product, hence why the reason why you guys exist, right?
Yeah, I mean, we want to have a conversation with you about how you found the accounting market, like your experience with it, given I think a lot of people who build software for accountants are accountants a lot of the time because they've felt this personal pain point and they want to go and solve it. And there's obviously challenges with that as well for them being so, I suppose, in it themselves, they sometimes miss the broader issues, and potentially coming in from the outside, you've got some advantages and disadvantages that are different. But how do you see the accounting industry and profession, obviously as a vendor?
As a vendor, I think it's great, but if I could summarize three things I think you need with any sort of successful product, you need the right timing. So we came in the back of, obviously, we've just gone into potentially a recession, or we've just had the B2B market die. I think about July last year, valuations corrected massively, and there's a whole heap of economic stress around at the moment. The right to play. So I think where other accountants may have a leg up is that network of accountants or friends to help test, develop and improve a product or a hypothesis at least. And then runway, like you've got to have enough cash to keep the lights on. So I think in regards to the accountant space, yeah, it's a super busy market. There's lots of people trying to build things for it. But if you get it right, accountants will buy and buy year on year. And repeatedly, as you can see, some of the successful products in the space, but you've just got to make sure you cross that threshold of value for them to want to actually spend, not alone spend the money, but use the product to then obviously be able to scale through that channel. I think, yeah, if you underestimate the time cycle for selling to accountants, and because they're exceptionally busy people, I knew it was long, and then it got even longer with the economic stress around. I think if you underestimate those key things of trying to hit a key business person that's always under pressure to deliver on deadlines, you're probably going to leave yourself out for a lot of disappointment.
Yeah, I mean, something that we say a lot to the founders that we work with is that, you know, it's a double-ended sword working with accountants, because if you do it well and you do it right and, you know, you solve a problem for them and you work with them in the right way, they can be an amazing channel and they can be an amazing partner to work with and customer. But I think too many people see them purely as a channel, you know, one-to-many sales opportunity in a way. And yeah, and cutting through in a very competitive space is difficult when, you know, if that's the sole value proposition. So, I mean, how do you see that? I mean, that sales cycle is quite an interesting point, 6-12 months potentially. That's hard enough if you've got runway. How do you see that challenge coming from an early stage startup perspective?
I think in terms of market entry and who you target for a 6-12 month deal cycle for SMB deal value. So SMEs are like small ticket items. You can usually get them on AAR, recurring monthly subscriptions, but they're very small. So your time to activate and the time to cash in on that reward is a long deal cycle. So for a startup, it's really hard to capitalize there. If you go up to enterprise, you can sort of absorb those 6-12. I think they're even 18 months for some products nowadays, or for some things in the market, but you can absorb that because you get the bigger deal flow in the door. And that's probably your key risk. So if you're targeting accountants and you don't have more than 18 months worth of runway in the bank account, you probably need to find a different route or a more responsive channel that's going to buy quicker to keep things moving along.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a real challenge. And I think that's why finding who are the early adopters, who are the people who actually take up tech and prioritize it in their firm is hard to do and something to focus on. But I mean, we obviously want to, this has been extremely valuable, but given limited time, I do need to cut to the chase and ask you a little bit more about, you know, where you're at now and your decision to wrap things up with BitLeave. So I might just put that there with you and you tell it to us how you want, but you know, how did you kind of come to that decision? And yeah.
Yeah, it's probably a bit of a different story to most startups that shut shop in the next 12 to 18 months. We raised enough capital to keep the lights on for the next 18 months. But due to a couple of family issues from my side and my co-founder Kushal's, that sort of made it really hard to sort of really give 100% commitment to the product and the business, because if something in life happened, I'd have to divert my attention. And then also just through the data and talking to accountants, I knew the problem exists, but I kind of came to the acceptance, I guess, that it needs to be in a bigger product. So hence why I was lucky enough to meet Marcus and the team at Yellow Canary along the journey for the fundraising route. And they're a payroll compliance product company that's got a few products coming through the market at the moment. And I can continue some of that work I learned in BitLeave across with the team there. So really, like, it was just sort of, I've got this really bad habit of burning out myself, hence the passion in the space. So instead of flogging my head against a brick wall, instead of fighting all of these external factors where you have to have them in your favor, runway, right to play and timing, I just made the grown-up decision to take what I'd learned, use it as a great experience, not burn any of the relationships I established in the accounting industry or investors, and decide to wind up shop instead of take money and just pay myself for the next 12 to 18 months and cause a whole heap of stress. So probably a bit of a different decision, probably a little bit more mature from my end, as opposed to, I'm pretty persistent with my ideas, but I think it was the best decision for the product and the fact we've been able to exit, not really burning on. Of course, we lost obviously the money from Antler, but they've been great with that process. I think it's actually quite a good outcome, to be honest.
Brad, on one particular thing that you've mentioned that I think is worth unpacking a little bit, because it is definitely something a lot of early stage startups face. It's kind of like what you alluded to, that basically it was more of a feature than a product on its own, right? And even just recently when I was at an exhibition, an event over in the UK, and someone I'll keep unnamed that's been in the industry in this space for a good 20 or more years, and he came to our stand and looked around and he said, like, there's so many startups and vendors here that they're basically a feature. It's not really a product on its own, right? So, I mean, from your experience and in hindsight, I mean, is there anything that you've got some learnings to share on how can you tell early on if you are into something that's more of a feature? And if you do realize, okay, I'm just a feature, like, what is the best route moving forward from that?
It's obviously product and business dependent. Like, I think everyone starts as a feature at some point, purely because you can't build fast enough to become a standalone product. But I think if you're going to pick a feature that's in the top three problems that an accountant faces. If it's not in the top three, probably just put it on the back burner and find something else to work on. So your prioritization of what you build and what you're solving is obviously paramount. But that's, it shouldn't be in a way that discourages founders for having a crack, because if you're talking to your customers, if you're talking to the accountant space and you get, and you're open with that feedback like you're meant to be, that feature might evolve, like ours evolved, and then eventually it might even come, some of it might even come through to fruition through other means, like through YC or where else. But if you find out you've got a feature, work out if it's in the top three. If not, pivot fast. Go back into that customer discovery phase, learn that market if you don't already know it inside out. If you're an accountant, probably have a little bit of an advantage there. And then if you still can't crack that nut, if you see the moat to breaking in is too big or the gap too large, find a product or another space. But ideally, all that customer development or the majority of that front-end work should be done before you start to build anything. so you can save yourself a lot of heartache, rework, and time, I guess.
You were able to raise money that you eventually decided not to. What do you think was what worked in your pitch that you think other maybe any lessons there for other early stage startups?
I think throughout the pitching to like hundreds of people, right, and then lots of accountants and things like that, I think what I was really good at was selling the vision, which I think every good founder needs to be. But it was my passion that probably cut through the noise, because I could pitch well, I could articulate the problem, I could answer objections, and I could steer conversations to the way that we were trying to like show people what we were capable of. So on the investor side, they were buying us as a team and the ability to have a big vision and see the potential of us actually achieving it. And on the accountant side, it was actually a little bit harder because they're more pragmatic. They're thinking of the now, of what this adds now is, does this solve an immediate burning problem? And that's where I started to learn, okay, this isn't a big enough product to really cut through that market. So if you're not able to get someone to go, yes, this is an immediate problem, I will give you the money for the product now on the customer side, or an investor, if they're not sold, you really need to look at the sort of expectations of what they're looking to see and what you're looking to solve on the customer side. It's a nuanced answer. It's very hard to explain, because people present differently. People have different data sets. But pitching to 100, 300 people for an open pitch night doesn't faze me, put it that way. So I'm probably a little bit different to other people that get nervous from public speaking.
Brett, on the side of pitching to investors, this might be a bit counterintuitive, but let's see what you think. Do you think there can be a downside of being like having a big vision, being passionate, being charismatic, basically being good at selling a dream to investors? Can that actually backfire, that you're convincing people on the journey for the wrong reasons?
Yeah, I think, what's, there's been numerous stories in the news about people going to jail for all sorts of funky things, like Theranos, and those guys are obviously phenomenal human beings, right? But all I'd say for that is if you can sell but you can't execute off the back of it, you have to have the team behind you to execute the plan. Otherwise, you will be one of those people who just gets remembered as someone who just sold nothing and never delivered. So that's like, if you value your reputation in the space as a startup founder that wants to potentially go again at another problem or speak to those investors again, you've just got to make sure what you're actually selling is possible. Like, we knew at every point we could build what we wanted, but it wasn't a big enough market demand. It wasn't high enough on the priority list. So, I think if you're selling without the execution off the back end, that's not going to end well for anyone.
Now, we don't have long left, Brett, but before we get to the topic question, which will be our final wrap-up question, just like we ask everybody, something I wanted to get your thoughts on. We chatted briefly about it before we started recording, and something that seems to be coming up more and more that we're seeing, because we talk to a lot of founders, and I don't know if it's... I imagine someone's coined this properly, but it feels like there is a little bit of a founder paradox, and I'm keen to get your experience now that you've been through it and out the other side, which is this challenge of being to start a startup. You've got to be overly optimistic. The odds are very public. It's maybe it's 9 out of 10, maybe it's not 9 out of 10, but it's a high rate of failure amongst startups. And so to go and start one instantly says, I think I'm better than 9 out of 10 people who fail at this, and I'm going to be the 1 out of 10. But then immediately it feels like the next day you have to humble yourself, and like you did, talk to a lot of people and understand, am I the only one who feels this pain point? Does everyone else? What are the nuances? What are the details that I'm missing? Because there's always unknown unknowns. There's always blind spots that people have. It's impossible to know it all. We all have biases as well. So, I mean, how do you see that? It feels like it's almost like an impossible challenge, and the founders or people who can build a great business are people who can listen to their customers and learn from them. Yet people who are going to start a startup have to just be bold and confident and almost just, you know, whenever they get hit with a wall, they just smash through the wall and keep going?
Yeah, I think it's changed a lot in the last 12 months with capital drying up as a founder too. So I think when money was cheap and the cash was flowing, it was easier to sell. Kind of like what we were just talking about selling and then not executing. There's a lot of people doing that. They just wanted to see and try. But now I think you have to be very much more confident with your roadmap and your plan, not so much your selling ability. And then the old metrics of traction are above all else in this current market. So I think ego, yeah, for a point, but that's kind of an optics thing, right? You can meet someone that says someone's got a big ego, but then you might meet someone else that's met the same person that says, no, he's just confident in their ability to execute. So you have to be confident enough to give it a crack. So it's probably not a case of like I'm better than 9 out of 10 startups. It's more like I'm crazy enough to give this a go and let's see where it lands. That's probably the optimist coming out of me. And then, yeah, the humility thing, you only get that from enough no's, enough beatings. And that kind of gets belted into most of us as founders. So if you don't have it, you're going to learn it real damn quick. So maybe it's a byproduct of just the environment. And then you see repeat founders are usually those humble, really sort of like consistent type folks because they've learned the hard ways before. And I think that's probably building a business before this. I knew how hard it was and I was sort of a bit more humble at the outset. And then fundamentally good human being principles around do no harm, treat people well, respect others. Those sorts of things go a long way in the space, probably more than what people think, because you never know when that'll come back and pay dividends for your product idea or your next one if it does fail.
Yeah, no, you're right. I think just having some good fundamental values is not a bad place to start. And you're right, second time, third time, fourth time, fifth time founders are like, absolutely, they want to know as soon as possible if their idea has no legs. They want you to destroy it because they've been there before and wasted a year, 2 years building something that went nowhere. And so they'd much rather find out tomorrow. Whereas I think the first time you do it, you kind of don't want to hear those things and you just want to keep getting told that it's an amazing idea.
Well, you think about the optics thing, right? You hear of really successful ones that make you think it's possible, and then you hear of really bad ones. You just don't want to be in the really bad section. If you can find somewhere on the spectrum of giving it a crack and maybe failing but not being put in jail or in the headlines, you're probably doing all right. And then if you manage to get through over the gap and take off and you're one of those very rare unicorn types, that's an even better story again. But just try not to be in that group that obviously spends a bit of time away or gets in trouble.
Yes, agreed. So with that, Brett, let's wrap it up. I got one last question for you. What do you see as the biggest tar pit mistakes that accounting tech or startups make regularly and really need to avoid?
Yeah, so we'll probably stick with the old ego piece and it's building something before you validate it. I think that there's some good books out there that sort of highlight the ratios or the amount of people you need to talk to as a good framework for B2B or B2C software. And if you're not really willing to go in and dig in with people just by having a coffee, talking about things, it's probably going to lead you into a really poor position later down the track. So ask lots of questions, get to some level of certainty that you're at least willing to step off based on the data you have, not your ego. And don't write a line of code until you've got something down that you've got some reasonable sort of threshold of acceptance that it's worth your time.
Yeah, and I think we could talk about that for an hour probably, Johan and I. But maybe we'll save that for our little bonus clip. Thanks, Brett, for joining us today and really appreciate you being so open and honest about the journey you've been on.
No problems at all. If it helps just one other person, it's probably a good thing.
Thank you once again for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed the episode. If you are a potential founder in your early stages of developing a product or elsewhere in the journey struggling to achieve product market fit, we would love for you to reach out at www.earlyadoptershub.com. This has been another episode of the Accounting Tech Tar Pit, presented by Early Adopters Hub, the accelerator for accounting tech.